Order. Good morning. The Commission is hereby convened in open session Thursday, October 11, 2007, to consider the matter entitled Secretary of Labor versus the American Coal Company. Docket numbers Lake 2005-129 and Lake 2006-28. President are myself, Chairman Duffy, Chairman Jordan, Commissioner Jordan, and Commissioner Young. We will start with an overview of the case presented by John Sullivan of the Office of General Counsel. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. In these consolidated civil penalty proceedings arising under the Federal Mine Safety and Health Act of 1977, at issue before the Commission is an administrative law judge's decision to affirm two citations that were issued by the Department of Labor's Mine Safety and Health Administration to the American Coal Company for violations of the underground coal mine escape rate requirements set forth at 30 CFR section 75.380. The alleged violations took place at American's longwall mining operations at its Galatia mine in Saline County, Illinois. There, coal cut by the longwall shear would fall onto the longwall pan line, which runs parallel to the face and would move the coal towards the head gate of the longwall. Access to each longwall panel was provided by three parallel entries at the head gate and three parallel entries at the tailgate of the longwall. Farthest from the longwall was head gate entry number one, the intake air entry, which, in accordance with the requirements of section 75.380, was designated by American as the second area of the two passageways provided off the section to be used in the event of an emergency. Next was head gate entry number two, which was designated the primary escapeway. Closest to the longwall was head gate entry number three, also called the belt entry. Number three entry was not a designated escapeway, but workers leaving the face via the head gate, which is to be the escape route off the face in most emergencies, would have to use the number three entry to reach a crosscut to get to the other entries, and thus the designated escapeways. On one side of the number three entry was a rib of coal intersected by crosscuts, while on the other side was a solid block of coal to be cut by the shear on subsequent longwall cycles. Much of the width of the number three entry immediately out by the face included essential longwall equipment, specifically the end of the pan line that connected perpendicularly to the stage loader and from which the coal from the face was deposited into the stage loader. The stage loader, which would crush the coal and move it out by the entry, depositing it onto the conveyor belt. And third, the conveyor belt transport the coal to the surface. The pan line is approximately 3 feet wide where connected to the tailpiece of the stage loader, as was the tailpiece connecting the stage loader to the conveyor belt. The width of the stage loader varied, but at its widest was 13 feet. Standard operating practice for the stage loader was that it would remain stationary in the middle of the entry. Consequently, in that situation, there would be pathways on either side of the stage loader, each no more than 2.5 feet wide at the widest point of the stage loader. Because the pan line where it connected to the stage loader obstructed access between the face and the block side of the stage loader, use of the pathway on the other side of the stage loader was necessary for unobstructed travel around the stage loader. The stage loader, however, does not always remain stationary and may migrate across the entry due to the way the shear is aligned while it is cutting coal. In this case, cutting coal deeper at the tailgate area of the longwall would gradually cause the stage loader to migrate. Over the course of several shifts, from the center of the entry, farther away from the block side and closer to the rib side of the entry. The issue of stage loader migration as it affected travel through the number three entry first arose on May 11, 2005, when MSHA Inspector Stephen Miller issued citation number 758-1701 to American. The citation, charging a violation of section 75.380A, alleged that the migration of the stage loader to the rib prevented a safe egress offer on the longwall face, as miners would only have access to leave the face by climbing over the stage loader. The stage loader reached a height of 4.5 feet, approximately 2.5 feet below the roof of the entry. In order to terminate the citation, American had to make longwall adjustments. Counteract stage loader migration from center line to rib, the longwall shear must be adjusted to cut deeper into the headgate area to cause the stage loader to migrate towards the solid block of coal until it has returned to the center of the entry. Just as the initial migration of the stage loader will take place gradually over several shifts, so does the redirection back to the center. citation number 7581701, which is not at issue in this case, was terminated 4 days later. American did not contest the citation and eventually paid the $60 penalty assessed for it. Because Inspector Miller did not observe any miner traveling through the area at the time, the citation was not designated significant and substantial. On June 7, 2005, however, another Penitentiary inspector witnessed a miner climb over the top of the stage ladder in the vicinity of the pan line motor while the motor was running to get to the 6th North Longwall face. In that instance, the stage ladder had again migrated to within inches of the rib, thus preventing any miner from traveling around the stage ladder on that side of the entry. Consequently, the inspector issued citation number 7581904 to American, again alleging a violation of section 75.380A, because the stage ladder migration had prevented a safe egress slash escape slash travelway on and off the 6th North Longwall face as required. This time the citation was designated S&S due to the muddy conditions in the headgate area, which the inspector believed made it more likely that a miner would slip and fall while climbing over the stage ladder. Moreover, at that time, the tailgate was not considered a travelable alternative route to the designated escapeways because of unsupported roof in the tailgate area. On September 8, 2005, by which time the Longwall had moved to the 7th North section of the mine, Inspector Miller witnessed a miner climbing over the stage ladder, this time over its crushing mechanism. Again, the miner could not have gone around the stage ladder on the rib side of the entry because the stage ladder had migrated to within 10 inches of the rib. Consequently, Inspector Miller issued a third citation to American for a violation of Section 75.380A. on the ground that a safe egress route is not provided on or off the 7th North Longwall face as required. Given the muddy conditions of the headgate area, the citation was again designated S&S. The Secretary proposed a penalty of $370.5 for the June citation and a penalty of $524 for the September citation. American contested the penalties on the ground that in neither instance had it violated Section 75.380A. The judge viewed the case as one in which he needed to decide the location at which, under the terms of Section 75.380, an escapeway is considered to begin. In his decision, he held that in this instance the escapeway began at the face. He did so by applying what he understood to be the plain meaning of the standards requirement that escapeways are to run from each working section. He concluded that the language meant that escapeways were required not only from the loading point of a section, as American argued, but were also to include the remainder of the working section. He further concluded that in both instances when the stage loader migrated to within less than 1 foot from the rib, miners were denied the assurance of passage requirements of Section 75.380D1. The judge ruled that when Americans received that Americans received the first uncontested citation, provided it with notice that Section 75.380A applied in the later instances. Further found that both citations were S&S and assessed the $899 in total penalties for the two citations requested by the Secretary. American has limited its appeal to the findings of violation. As it did below, American argues that the area in which the stage ladder sat was not within the scope of the escapeway requirement. According to American, from the plain meaning of Section 75.380, an operator is only obligated to provide an escapeway from each working section. And working section is defined in the Mine Act to start at the loading point of the section. So any point in by the loading point is not within the ambit of the escapeway requirement. Since the loading point was the tailpiece and the stage loader was in by it, American argues that it was improperly cited for a violation of Section 75.380. The Secretary responds that in order to give effect to the purpose of Section 75.380, the standard must be interpreted to require that the route to entries necessary to access designated escapeways must not be blocked or impeded to such an extent that the escapeway is rendered inaccessible. The Secretary relies on the regulatory requirement that the designated escapeways be travelable to support this interpretation. She also maintains that although the judge's approach to interpreting Section 75.380 is slightly different from hers, both approaches are consistent with the language and purpose of the standard. I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, John, and thank you for the DM. I especially like the analogy between the situation here and impassable main arteries versus impassable secondary roads. It's helpful to me to just visualize what the issue is. Commissioner Jordan.
I'd also like to thank you, John, for the DM. It was very helpful, and also for your help in discussions, you know, and information that I requested from you prior to the meeting today. The operator in this case was cited twice in the instances that are before us, but actually three times, for a situation that the secretary contended essentially was not providing safe egress off of the face. And I believe that the judge, based on the conditions that were presented in the hearing before the judge, I would agree that they were not providing safe egress in the conditions that the DM lays out and that you've discussed this morning. And I think that the question is, and I believe that the operator is required to provide a safe egress. And the question that I think has engrossed me and probably, I gather, may have engrossed my colleagues is just, what's the most helpful and appropriate analysis to be applied as to why they're required to provide the safe egress? The secretary's position, I mean, and I think it's been a little difficult in the sense that the parties and the judge's analysis all are can be somewhat problematic. The secretary has indicated that the area from the loading point out by the mine must be travelable, and that the conditions that were cited in these cases prevented access to that travelable escapeway. The operator argues that the area in question, which is from the working section to the working base, is not covered by the escapeway requirements, and therefore sort of like in this no man's land, and they really don't have to comply with any of the egress or designated escapeway requirements. And they seem to concede at one point that in their main brief that perhaps it was somewhat reasonable of the secretary to say that if you have to have a travel way from out of the mine from the loading point, that you have to have access to that travel way. But then they seem to be backing off of that in their reply brief and claim that they really had no requirements of the escapeway standard that they needed to comply with in that section. And in any event, the miners did have access to the travel way because they were able to either climb over the stage loader or alternatively climb over the pan and under the belt. And the judge seemed to take the approach that the escapeway requirements didn't end at the loading point of the mine. They continued and could be applied up to the working face. And of course, as the operator has pointed out, that creates problems because some of the escapeway requirements in some of the subsections can't seem to be able to be feasibly required as you get close to the face area. Some of the width and height standards, some of the, lifeline, things like that are typically not required in this part of the mine that we're talking about here. The DM has suggested that the requirement of 75380B that the operator provide an escapeway from the working section out of the mine is violated when there's not access to that escapeway, and that the situation that we had here essentially denied access to that escapeway. I would certainly agree with that analysis. But I also would, I'm concerned, I don't view the escapeway requirements, and I don't want to, I would hesitate to give some indication that the escapeway requirements, that the Secretary is limited in applying the escapeway requirements mandated by the statute, or as she sees feasible under her regulations, to the area that we have in question here, the area being the working section, which essentially encompasses the loading point up to the working face. I think that that approach would be inconsistent with the statute. Now, however, what is before us, and I think that this decision is should be focused on the case that's before us, which is that here, the Secretary was requiring that the stage loader be kept in the middle of the entry. That if that was done, miners had approximately 2.5 feet clearance on the side of the stage loader to get around it and to get out to the rest of the escapeway, the rest of the mine. I believe that the Secretary, the statute, in the Act itself, Congress said that there had to be two separate and distinct travelable passageways from each working section. Now, the working section is defined as all areas of the coal mine from the loading point to and including the working face. So it is, it's not one particular little finite point. It is an area within the mine. The operator here is saying, let's consider that area. Let's just consider the front of that area. That's where the escape waste goes from. But that would be inaccurate because the Act goes on in the next section, subsection 2. Congress requires that there be a escapeway that's ventilated with intake air and it be separated from the belt or haulage entries. Now, that requirement was, I guess, a little more burdensome, and they made that requirement only applicable to mines that were going to be opened after the passage of the Act, or to new sections that were opened after the date of the statute. And that requirement, they specifically said that it would go for the entire length of the entry to the beginning of each working section. And so I think that it would be unduly restrictive and inconsistent with the statute to say that the escapeway requirement requiring two travelable passageways is limited, must be limited to the front of the working section, since Congress in another part of the Act made a requirement that was limited to the front of the work, or the beginning of the working section. Now, that being said, you know, as the parties have pointed out in this case, and you know, the briefs, I mean, there's requirements that are in the escapeway standards that don't seem to work, you know, if you carry them all the way up to the working face. But this case, in my mind, this case involves the requirement, the Secretary has focused on the requirement that there be a travelable passageway. In my view, that requirement that there be a travelable passageway That word itself could actually apply to this area that we're concerned with. And, I mean, I think that people have reached the same result, and I'm not sure that it is very different analytically. I mean, if you say that this part over here has to be travelable, and so if you don't let us get to the travelable part, then you know, there's a problem. The travel requirement is meaningless, and the commission has taken that approach in cases where we've said, if there's a requirement that you provide something, and you provide it in such a way that it doesn't serve the purpose that it was meant to, then you're not complying with the standard. In other words, if you're required to have a slippage and sequence switch and you provide one on the belt and it's not functioning, then you haven't complied with the standard and to that effect. So there is a requirement that things function. And, you know, I think the Secretary's argument essentially boils down to that, although I agree with the DM that to hoist it on the term travelable itself is probably a bit, you know, contorting. Like the Secretary is saying, to have one passageway required to be travelable, then travelable means, I'm not exactly sure what she's saying, but essentially it seems to be travelable means that everything else, you know, to get to the travelable part, if you can't get to the travelable part, you haven't complied with the requirement that there be a travelable pass, you know, escapeway. But I think that it's simpler and, you know, cleaner to say that the consistent with the statute, to say that Congress required there be a travelable passageway, and that in this case, the Secretary is determining that travelable means a 2.5-foot clearance between the stage loader and the rib. Now, I think the Secretary does have the ability to apply the requirement, the travel requirement, in this way at this mine, that it's a reasonable application of it. And that the operator was certainly on notice that this is exactly what the Secretary was requiring in this case be provided to the miners. In fact, this was the third time in a fairly short period of time, I think a matter of just a few months, that the operator had violated this requirement. The first time was in May, where they allowed the stage loader to migrate and blocked the escapeway, or the passageway between the face and the loading point. They didn't challenge that citation. It wasn't even designated S&S by the inspector. Puzzling to me why that was not the case. The inspector seemed to consider the fact that since he didn't actually observe a miner climbing over the stage loader at that point, that the citation didn't warrant a S&S determination. In any event, that one they didn't contest, but less than a month later, the stage loader had migrated to such an extent that there was only 2 to 3 inches clearance. So every miner, you know, to get off of that face in an emergency, and by the way, we're talking about a face, a longwall face, that's 1,000 foot in length. So before you even get to this blocked part, there could be miners that have had to travel as much as 1,000 feet across from the tailgate side of the face, and then have to hoist themselves up over this stage loader. They were cited for that. That was designated S&S because the inspector actually saw somebody climbing over it. And 3 months later, and another inspector was at the mine. They saw that it was, again, had migrated. The miners, there would only be a clearance of 10 to 12 inches. And on that day in question, the tailgate side of the longwall, which is not a designated escapeway, which the parties in the record reflects, is understood it could be a means out of the mine if you had to. I mean, if somebody's over, you know, the 1,000 feet on that end of the face and something happened and they couldn't get that 1,000 feet over to the clearance provided to them, theoretically they might be able to get to that tailgate side. That side of the mine had been subject to a citation during that inspection for failing to comply with the roof control plan, which means that there was a hazard of, you know, roof fall danger on that end of the mine. And then the inspector comes over to this side and finds that the stage loader, contrary to warning twice being cited before, is migrated again and it's blocked only 10 to 12 inches clearance. The operator contends that this migration is caused in part by how it mines the coal, and that part of the problem is roof fall problems on the tailgate side of the mine sometimes require it to mine deeper on the tailgate side, ergo causing the stage loader to migrate. Well, this, to me, is really quite incredible, because when I read that argument and then I read, you know, realize that on the very day in question, they're being cited for failing to comply with their roof control plan, ergo perhaps risking roof fall damage on the tailgate, which is the condition they're complaining of, is leading to migration of the stage loader. So one of the they were assessed what I consider to be a very minimal penalty in these cases. The second time, the one in June, which is the first citation in this case, you know, that's an issue here, they were assessed, I believe, like $375, something like that. And the third time that they violated this requirement, the citation only went up to $525. And, you know, I think I have a concern in my mind. And mind you, let's keep in mind that when this situation is cited and a violation is discovered, it's not something that can be corrected right away. At least in one case, it seems to take like four shifts to get this stage loader back to center position. That's four shifts that miners are mining in that there's not adequate clearance. There's not safe egress off the space. And as the judge pointed out, one of these violations, I don't know if it was the second or the third time, the violation was not even noted in their pre-shift book. In other words, they clearly did not consider this something to even be concerned about. It was obvious. It's an obvious violation. It's an obvious situation. I mean, when you have something going down, you know, that small amount of clearance, it's not something that, you know. So I am seriously considering whether there should be a vacating of the penalty award. I mean, I would affirm the judge. Perhaps, you know, firmer in result. I think my analysis may be slightly different. I certainly agree with the analysis proposed in the DM, but I would also decline to imply that the travel way requirement itself would not apply to the clearance issue in this part of the mine, to this section. And I would consider whether we should reconsider the penalty. I mean, the judge found only, the judge affirmed the penalty that was assessed by the secretary. I mean, that's what happened. And that was proposed by the secretary. And I think he only found moderate negligence, I have a serious question whether that's the appropriate finding of negligence for these violations. And I think one of the things the judge seemed to consider the citation 7581788, he considered that, you know, like the second time they violated, because of course the first time they violated was never challenged, never litigated. So, but I think that is really essentially an inaccurate or omission of a pertinent fact. I know it's a high standard abuse of discretion. You know, the judge has discretion when he issues the penalty, but at the same time, I'm concerned because I don't know if substantial evidence, that standard, how it plays into this, but I don't think the record would have substantial evidence to support only a moderate negligence here, especially when it, you know, comes to the third violation and not even noted on its appreciation. I mean, that really starts to denote, you know, a kind of indifference, and I think that, you know, they just didn't think they were going to bother complying with this. And, as I indicated earlier, there's some indication that the facts that propel this problem of the stage loaded migrating seem to be, you know, may have even been prompted by the operator's lack of failure to comply with its roof control plan over in the tailgate side, which only even worsens the danger here, because the miner on the third day, if they, all their escape ways, you know, were on the headgate side, and they didn't have safe clearance off of the face on the headgate side, and the tailgate side, as sort of just a last gasp way to get out on the day in question, you'd risk a roof fall danger if you tried to get out on that side. So, you know, or at least the area was cited for failure to comply with the roof control plan. So I would suggest that we take a look at that, the penalty issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Jordan. Commissioner Young?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sullivan, I'd also like to commend you for the excellent work in the decisional memorandum. I do have to tell you that on my initial reading, I didn't really agree with it, in part because there's a lot of the concerns Commissioner Jordan has expressed with how this standard would be applied. But on further review, I believe that you have taken a deep and thoughtful look at this problem and proposed what may be the only practical solution in light of the other difficulties. Subsections A and B are literally only the beginning of 75380 are only the beginning of a very long and very detailed provision governing escapeways. And it's important that we consider what the impact of our decision might be if we were to consider the entire area extending all along a working face that's 1,000 or more feet long to be the escapeway. I don't know how you construct an enforcement regime that parses along or provides clear guidance to inspectors as to which of these standards governing placement of equipment, markings, etc., would apply at what point to the escapeway. I believe it's enough in this case, as you've suggested, that we ensure that the decision we make and the opinion we issue does not drain the vitality and meaning from the escapeway provision of the Act and the regulations. In this case, noting that the escapeway was not provided by the operator, I believe can achieve that. And while it's not necessarily an issue in this case, I do believe it's important that we make clear somehow in the opinion that certain of the standards governing escapeways must apply in order to preserve the intent of the regulation and the Mine Act. For example, the regulation requires that the escapeways be travelable at all times by any person, including injured miners. These are standards that must be preserved. Clearly, in this case, they were not. I do believe the Secretary pretty much got it right in how the case was cited, how the violation was cited, in noting that they did not provide a travelable passageway, i.e., access to the escapeway. But the access must apply to all of the miners who need that access in a mine emergency. And I believe it's important that we ensure that that carries through whatever decision we make. Concerning notice, I would agree that there's no question that they would have had notice in this case, not only because a reasonable person with familiarity with the act and the regulations and their intent and purpose would have to ensure that every miner working in the mine would have access to the escapeways intended by the act and regulations, but also because of the previous citations that are by Commissioner Jordan. Concerning the penalty, while we do have an independent duty to consider and assess the penalties, and while we have noted deviations made by ALJs, which have been significant from penalties proposed or assessed by the Secretary for failure to show their work, so to speak, I believe it would be beyond extraordinary for us to look at a penalty that affirms what the Secretary proposed and then goes beyond that, and the judge independently explained why he felt that it was, in fact, warranted to issue a penalty that was about a third higher for the third violation because it was a repeat violation. Abuse of discretion is a difficult standard. When you're talking about the Secretary proposes something, the ALJ relies on that. If you want to go back and relitigate the case and repropose how this case should have been inspected, cited, tried, whatever, I just don't think that that's a responsible position for the Commission to take, so I would strongly disagree with that approach. But in sum, I would otherwise agree with the position set forth in the DM, provided that we do make clear that these provisions, the escapeway provisions, an important part of the Mine Act, must be made available to the miners they were intended to cover at all times. And that includes all miners, including injured miners. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Young. I, too, would affirm the judge's result, but on the grounds that the obstruction caused by the stage loader in the number 3 entry effectively prevented American Coal from providing 2 escapeways from a longwall panel, as Section 75.380 requires. In so doing, I reject the judge's conclusion that Section 75.380 somehow applies within working sections. Likewise, I reject the Secretary's theory that the standard was violated because the escapeways were not travelable owing to the obstruction in the working section. I agree with American Coal that the escapeways in question were in compliance with the requirements of 75.380 in general, and that the area of the mine in by the loading point is not, technically speaking, part of the escapeway. Section 75.2 defines working section as all areas of the mine from the loading point of a section to and including the working faces. Here, the loading point would be the stage where the stage loader dumps the crushed coal onto the conveyor belt for transport out of the mine. The Commission's decision in Beth Energy Mines Incorporated, 8 FMS HRC 1445, August 1989, supports that view. Therefore, the individual requirements for escapeways, such as height and width requirements, would apply out by the loading point, but not necessarily in by the loading point. And I believe the Secretary acknowledges that. Likewise, the travelability requirement applies to the escapeways, but I don't believe the Secretary can apply that criterion to areas in by the loading point without distorting the scope and meaning of 75.380. On the other hand, when 75.380 requires that escapeways be provided, implicit in that language is a presumption that miners can safely and quickly reach those escapeways in the event of an emergency. Here that means that miners must be able to reach the escape ways by means of the rib side of the stage loader. When that means of access is blocked, then the escape ways are not being provided as the standard requires. In my view, this reading of the standard ensures that miners on a working section will have safe access to escape ways without distorting the long-standing conceptions of what constitutes an escape way and where it is located in relation to the working section. Moreover, on the basis of the issuance of the citation of May of 2005, I believe America had sufficient notice of its obligations under the standard. I might add that this case strongly suggests that there may be a regulatory gap in the standards governing safe egress from the mine in cases of emergency, particularly with respect to longwall configurations. Here, I presume that so long as the stage load remains in the middle of the entry and allows a passageway of 2.5 feet, American Coal would be deemed in compliance by the Secretary. But what if the gap between the loader and the rib is reduced to 2 feet? The Secretary's standards do not address minimum clearances in such circumstances and do not spell out criteria for alternative means of egress when the stage loader migrates too far from the midpoint of the entry. Accordingly, I recommend that the Secretary consider rulemaking to set forth some performance criteria for longwall working sections so as to apprise the industry of what will be expected in these circumstances. So I would affirm the judge, but on the grounds that I've set forth, I would leave the civil penalty alone. Anything else? Again, thank you very much, John. We will adjourn.